It's fear.
Thinking like, what is it that helps you proceed? I'm a fraud. I suck. I won't be allowed. I can't call myself an artist. If the dad can stumble and fall and get up and live to tell another day, I can too. Because if it's not amazing, then what?
Hey everyone, it's Nicholas Wilton, and I'm super excited to be sitting here today with Rachel Davis. Rachel is an artist, a mixed media artist. She actually is in the studio that I'm in the building, just so happens. But she's also a psychologist and has been working with artists for decades. And so Rachel and I are always having these conversations around getting stuck and unstuck and the barriers that artists face. And she's particularly suited to speak to this because not only is she an artist, but she also understands kind of the backstory and working with artists and the experience. So our hope today is that we can shed some light on some of your challenges and ways to move through it. So thanks so much for being here, Rachel.
My pleasure.
It's great. I know we've talked a lot about this just in the halls, and so it's nice to kind of memorialize it and get it down.
Cool.
So why don't we, what we'll do is we'll do a little quick backstory of how you got here, and you were doing art second and psychology first. We're always interested in, that's really interesting. So let's dive into that a little bit, and then we'll dive into the artists that, you know, the creature of the artist that we all are.
Sounds good.
The problems of that.
Okay. All right. Well, I've been, like you said, it's been decades. I think it's probably been 30 years that I've been working with artists. And
wow.
I started working with artists before I was an artist, many years before I was an artist. And, you know, backstory for that, I had a beautiful mother who cared about beauty, and I sort of got that bug. And the rest of my family, brothers and dad, could give a damn. They just didn't care, but I really did.
So do you mean like she was aesthetic?
She was very, she grew up in the Mad Men era, and she was just very, you know, into that stuff. But she would want to go to museums and things like that, and he just didn't care. You know, he's a good guy, but he just didn't care. So, but I followed that path with her. We would look at beautiful things together and, you know, colors and all that stuff. So I, you know, didn't think of myself as having any artistic talent whatsoever, any bent towards it, nothing. But somehow artists, I was just opening a general practice in psychology, and artists started appearing. I don't know why, but I was really good with them. I was incredibly interested in what they were doing, and like couldn't hear enough about their process.
Wow.
And when they were stuck, I just kind of knew what to do and how to help them. And then 22 years ago or so, I started doing Japanese flower arranging, which I didn't recognize as an art form. I just thought it sounded cool. And one of the first things I wanted, like an object that was beautiful that I wanted, was a Japanese tea set that my mom got from her sister when she traveled to Japan. And as a little girl, I said, I want that. And she said, when you get married, I'll give it to you. And I still have it. So I was just always drawn to that aesthetic. That's how I got into Japanese flower arranging.
But you studied with like a master.
I mean,
this
I'm
wasn't
still
just
studying
like
with her.
A
yeah,
craft
still,
thing.
Well,
this
it
is
was
like,
initially, you know, it was just at a local, you know, community center, a little local, like, Marinwood Community Center, flower.
Yeah.
I said, well, that sounds cool. And everybody dropped out of the class, and it was then just me standing, and I've been working with her for 22 years.
You are kidding.
No, and it's just one-on-one at this point.
And what, okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not, of course, there's, you can go very deep with this, but
yeah, no,
wow.
it's been amazing. So now I'm teaching it, you know, it's a thing, and it's beautiful. And then 10 years ago, or maybe a little bit more, I started doing printmaking, monotype, and mixed media probably, and some classical portraiture thrown in there, which I sort of loved, but I hated it because there were so many ways to be wrong, you know, so that wasn't fun, but I love faces and I care about people. So I was continue to be drawn to that.
It's interesting how, you know, the psychology practice you know, it's almost like the master plan was you're an artist, but it took you helping them and how that right. they came into your life and you were marinated in yeah. it. And do you know why you didn't consider yourself an artist? I mean, what took so long maybe?
It really never occurred to me. I mean,
isn't that amazing?
It never even remotely occurred to me. And, nobody in my cohort, group, subculture, nobody. I mean, my mother loved beauty, but even she would have thought it was ludicrous to be an artist. I mean, that was...
Wow.
I mean, though she loved to go to museums and we would do that, but that would have been just silly, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It would never have been a thing.
Mm.
Just wasn't part of
yeah.
the backdrop.
And so what were the challenges that art you discovered? I mean, you get better at working with artists
you
over
do.
Time because you learn...
Yeah. Yeah, you do.
So that must have informed your own practice when you started.
You know, I don't know that. I think I've done more in my own art practice since CVP, even though I've been helping the artists all along. I mean, I've been thinking a lot about this since I knew I was doing the interview about how the process of CVP makes you... it's sort of like going into analysis another time,
yeah.
you know, because
yeah,
it really right. uncovers
uh-huh.
whatever crap you've got
uh-huh.
is going to get uncovered if you get serious about being an artist, you know. So,
right.
so
right.
I feel like I've been very good with artists all along, and now I feel like I'm better because of my deep dive.
And you're taking your own medicine.
Exactly.
I see.
Yeah, so I definitely feel like, you know, you get better at anything you do over years.
Yeah,
but, I'm better now, you know, the last couple of years. I was good before, but I really get it.
right,
yeah,
right.
I really get it now.
Yeah. And so the artist that you're working with, you're still working with.
Still working with,
is
yeah.
it, and maybe this is sort of ties into the big challenges artists. I mean, where are they getting stuck? What are you seeing?
The big challenges are, they're all fear-based. And I want to talk a little bit about that because, well, I'll talk a lot about it because that's it. And I'm going to lower
that's
the,
it, isn't it?
It is.
It's fear.
It is. It's fear. And I'm going to lower the bar on getting over it. You know?
Oh.
Yeah.
For all of us. You mean you'll make it easier to jump over the bar
no,
to get rid of fear?
No, I feel like we're not going to try to get over it.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That's what we're going to do.
Because that's a lot. I don't know. We got 35 minutes here.
We're not going to do
everybody.
It.
We're not
no,
curing people
No, we're not
today.
Curing anybody, and we're going to like give up trying to cure people, which is hard because everybody wants to be cured of how crappy it feels to feel frightened.
Yeah, that's what I...
Everybody wants that.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about ways to not keep trying to do that because it's...
We're reframing the problem,
and we're going to reframe the problem with, it's interesting, as I was preparing, with values, but not like dark light values. We're going to reframe the problem with like what matters to you values. Some
yes.
people don't like that word because they feel like it's too moralistic,
uh-huh.
but it's kind of where you start in CVP by asking what matters to you and
right.
why.
And value, and you know, because I get the metaphor of dark light value, but the loud conversation, the bones of a picture, what you see, the
right.
primary pieces, it's about value.
Right.
And the values that we hold inside of ourselves are also the fundamental building blocks,
correct.
The fundamental like star cores, all that.
Correct.
So there is a nice little...
And I didn't realize it
yeah.
as I was sort of thinking, like, what is it that helps you proceed even though fear is never going away? It's just not.
It's not.
It's not. Nope. That's the bad news.
Okay.
It's just not. But how do you proceed anyway? And that's values. You know, that's one of the keys to proceeding
yeah.
anyway is that.
Okay.
So first I want to talk a little bit about fear and
yeah.
why it's not ever going anywhere.
Okay.
And it really has to do with our, it's evolutionary. Because if you think about it, our far back ancestors who saw a tiger and said, whoa, that's a cool looking thing. And it's got stripes and look how fast it runs. And it's, you know, it's got teeth. And, wow, that's cool. They didn't make it. Like they didn't pass their genes on.
Right, right.
So the ones
who were eaten, exactly.
The ones who made it are the ones who were, you know, knew to be terrified.
Ah, interesting.
You know, so it's very baked into our survival to be frightened, you know. And one of the big fears that comes up for, maybe for everybody, but for artists in particular is, you know, I'm not good enough, you know, I won't, you know, I'm a fraud, I suck, I won't be allowed, I can't call myself an artist. Who do I think I am?
They're going to throw me out of the tribe
when they see my work. They're going to say I can't be here. If you think evolutionarily, if you got thrown out of your tribe, you would be eaten by a tiger. You know, it's like if you don't have your group around you.
Well, for sure, the feeling of being on the outside. I did this thing, it's a trail race. It's a big race, big, huge event. And I went and I volunteered to help on this trail. This was just last weekend.
Okay.
And there's this big evening, you know, you work on this trail and you're just like cutting weeds all day. It's kind of ridiculous. But, you know, I've run this race and I wanted to give back. It's the Western States race. It's a big deal up in Tahoe. And there's this party in the night, and there's all like the people who go every year. There's a lot of veterans. There's a huge history with this thing.
Right.
And they are all drinking and telling stories, but it's all about this race. And as a person who's on the outside, you're just new there.
Right.
And this guy was telling all these stories and he was kind of drunk and everything. He goes, you know what? I want to see who are the green people? Who are the newbies, you know? Mm-hmm. And he made us stand up. And it was incredibly awkward and it was alienating. And I mean, I was like, well, this guy clearly doesn't know how to build community. Because it's like, you don't want to isolate people. You don't want to make a us and them.
Right.
I was shocked at how bummed out. It really bummed me out.
Correct.
Like, it really
was like,
I just, and you know, I'm like, I don't care.
Right.
I mean, I have community, you know.
Right.
But I was just really... I didn't sleep well. I left early. You know, this is just a guy who was drunk and he wasn't using his words closely, but being put on the outside. So I relate to that totally.
And I think it's very primal. You know, I think it's just baked in. And, that's a very primary reason it's not going anywhere. I mean, it's sort of baked into our, everybody's DNA to need to belong. And also as humans, we are dependent for so long. Like, you know, again, if our parents decide, I don't want this kid, it's like, that's right. You're not going to make it for many, many, many years.
So you really
need the powers that be to find favor with you. And if they don't, you're screwed.
Yeah.
And that goes on for a very long time.
Yeah.
So there are many, many reasons that reinforce each other. For us to be on guard for belonging, you know, again, all this stuff gets in the way of doing good art. Like if you've got people thinking, you know, like, oh my God, what if people don't like it? You know, all this
stuff. Totally, yeah.
So it's just in there and it's not going anywhere. So what happens when you're terrified, and this happens whether or not you're terrified because like if a tiger were to break into this room somehow right now, we'd both get these huge adrenaline shots.
Mm-hmm.
And what would happen is that the blood would like flee our brains and go to our extremities because we not only is deliberating not helpful, it could hurt us. If we stop to think like, is this dangerous? You know, it's too late. We're dead.
So
the blood comes, you know, it mobilizes. You're like the grandmothers who can pick up a car when that happens.
Yeah.
It's because of adrenaline.
Uh-huh.
Super helpful.
Right, right.
Again, keeps you alive. But when you're afraid, like that night, I would imagine you had some little mini adrenaline thing going that night when that guy said that.
It
was something a little bit really uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
If you paid attention to what your body was doing, might have been. Was it tingly? I mean,
It was like, at first I was like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing because I don't have any story. I don't have any experience here. And he was asking me like, well, what was your day like? And it was just a boring day. I didn't have anything. But then I got like, look, jerk, you know, bring it. Like, I know how to talk in front of people. I'm fine in front of the campfire of 20 people. He's trying to humiliate me to make himself look better.
Got it.
I'll go for this. So I did get like, I got in a stronger place, but I was struck with how much it kind of like it
how quick
brought me down a little
yeah.
bit.
And how quickly.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
How quickly.
Because I was separated. And I didn't even really care if I was in that group.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
But I was like, I need to go back and like paint and do okay. my thing and right. stay in my thing. You know, but that was just, they failed to bring in volunteers and make them feel part of this thing.
Right.
It was a huge failure.
Yes.
But this guy's just a trail worker. He doesn't understand about how you make people, you know, like it's community building.
Right.
You know, it's like what we're doing. That's what I do.
Well,
know?
People can all, I mean, again, that's a different topic,
yeah,
but you
yeah,
can, you
yeah.
can, you could tell people you, he didn't know what he was doing if you want to make people feel shitty.
Yeah. yeah
you know
yeah,
what I mean? Like that's a quick way to
yeah,
do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is to like that primal
right.
stuff.
But to your point, I think you're absolutely right. It is, it's one of the biggest fears. Public speaking, right?
Right.
Being
right.
judged.
Right.
And,
exactly.
And I think dying. I think those
right.
two are the biggest.
Higher. Public speaking's higher.
Yeah. yeah
most
right.
people than dying.
Most people would just die.
Yes, yeah. They, rather than do that. So what, okay. So when you're adrenalized,
yeah.
if there's something, if the tiger comes in, you don't even feel bad. You're just using the adrenaline to mobilize you to run, to gate, to pick the car off the
right.
kid, that's what it does. But if you have a bunch of adrenaline for, let's do some art thing, for putting stuff into your first show, you know, or it's the first time you're submitting to a show, and you're like, you're getting closer, you're thinking, oh my God, my stuff sucks, who am I kidding? And it's starting uh-huh. to build up, you're getting more and more anxious. The feeling of adrenaline really feels crappy when there's not somebody, when there's not a big thing to do to mobilize for, you just feel awful.
So that's adrenaline?
That's adrenaline.
Or is
like
that
the tingling.
Fear?
Well, that same thing. Basically, adrenaline is like fear is what it's like bodily, it's what adrenaline feels like. And again, and you don't notice it if it's really an adrenaline situation because it's mobilizing you. But if not, you might feel like your heart is pounding, your fingers are tingling.
Mm-hmm.
You might feel, for
you
some
sweat,
people,
kinda.
You sweat. For some people, they feel lightheaded, they can't think, they might feel crazy.
Yeah.
It's like
yeah,
a very yeah. awful feeling. So let's say you're like, it's coming to the deadline, and you're feeling worse and worse
yeah.
and worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
And you say, forget it, I'm not doing it. Immediately what happens is that your adrenaline comes way down, and you feel great.
Well, you say, I'm not doing it?
You say, I'm not doing it. Let's say you choose not to do the, because it feels too awful.
Oh,
to
the
do
show.
It.
You
the
go,
show.
I'm canceling.
I'm not doing it. Forget it. Forget it. There'll be another one. I'm not doing it. What happens initially is that you feel fantastic. Because the
relief.
Huge relief. And the feeling of relief versus the crappy feeling, it's so tremendous that it's super reinforcing to avoid what makes you uncomfortable.
Oh.
Super duper reinforcing.
But 3 days later, you feel like
of
a
course.
Low life because you blew it.
Of
you
course.
Didn't
feel, yeah. Right. Exactly. But the short, get, my point here is that people don't avoid stuff because they're lazy or stupid or don't get that they're going to feel bad in 3 days. They avoid stuff because they really feel awful and they want to not feel awful in that moment.
Mm.
So they'll do anything to not feel awful. And one of the, it's not a problem I have, but one of the limitations of, and we have this little exercise we'll do later, one of the limitations of reasoning with yourself at this moment is, remember, one of the things that adrenaline does is that the blood rushes from your brain and goes to your extremities. So you're essentially at that moment, your brain is like a lizard's. That's lizard brain.
Yeah.
And lizards aren't very good at deliberating.
Mm.
So you can't, you're not much use to yourself. If you're high anxiety.
Right.
If you're
right.
in a highly anxious state, somebody can give you all the reasons in the world and you're not available. If you've ever been really, really anxious,
yeah.
your IQ plummets probably 15, 30 points.
God,
it's
no
just
kidding.
Not available. Your frontal lobe is not, it's literally not online because there's no oxygen there.
Wow.
Not no oxygen, but it's depleted.
Yeah.
You need oxygen to think in your frontal lobe and you don't have it. All you need to do is, like a lizard, you need to get the hell out of there when you're frightened.
Okay.
So that's what you do. Now, what this means is that, you know, I'm all for if you can tell yourself, snap out of it, just do it. Sometimes that works. Sometimes that's enough. Not when you're really terrified. But if you're just like a little scared and somebody says, oh, you can do it, Nick. It's like that guy's an asshole. Don't worry about it.
Uh-huh.
You could probably, well, maybe in that moment you couldn't because he really touched something.
Mm-hmm.
But normally, like if you got this is a silly example because you're not going to get nervous about submitting something in the art world because you're so confident there. But if it was some area where you were a little, you know, just a little nervous, not very nervous, then pushing yourself, nudging yourself is enough.
Do it anyway, philosophy.
Do it anyway, exactly.
Yeah,
just
know
do
better.
It, the Nike stuff, you know,
right,
that's
right.
Just do it. Sometimes that works, and I'm all for, I don't think you have to dig that deep if that's going to work. If somebody can push you or nudge you or a best friend can say, you were frightened last time too, just do it, you'll be fine.
Yeah,
say, you know, you're right,
yeah.
I'm fine, I'm cool. That's okay.
Okay.
But sometimes it just doesn't work. You know, sometimes, and I'm going to tell you this because I love this story. When I was learning some of this way of working, which is this way of like surrendering, like we're not going to try to conquer fear, we're going to surrender to the fact that fear's not going away.
Wow.
And we're going to stop wasting a whole mess of energy trying to make it go away. And we're going to try to like turn that energy to the art making instead, because
we
don't want to be depleted by trying to do something we're going to fail at anyway. So I was at some conference where they were introducing these concepts, and there were, I'd say, at least 300 of us there. And there were like freshly minted therapists who were 28 years old, right out of graduate school, and people in their 80s who were still practicing.
Yeah.
And the guy running it said, I want you to raise your hand if there has been some issue, some psychological issue that reared its head during the past month. And just, you don't have to tell us about it, but just raise your hand. So literally every single hand in the room goes up.
Of course.
Yeah, of course, because everybody's humans in the room. There's no,
right.
There's no aliens. Maybe aliens have issues too. I don't know. But anyway, everybody's hand goes up. He says, okay, now keep your hand up if you've, at some point in the course of the last year, the same issue came up for you. Not a hand comes down.
You mean people have experienced this, whatever their issue
whatever
is, multiple times.
Whatever it is. And then he starts going to 5-year increments. He says, okay, 5 years. At this point, you know where he's going. And like not a single hand comes down until he gets to 30 years, because then the 28-year-olds weren't born yet. And he keeps playing it out, you know, just for the visual. It was
right,
very dramatic.
Right, right. Like the room's not changing.
The room's not changing. And he gets to 95, and then the 92-year-old doddering therapist or whatever, he lowers his hand. So he says, okay, you know, like you're all professionals, you know, presumably you have some tools to deal with this stuff. Like what if the stuff that trips you up is just going to keep tripping you up? Like, what if that's true? And this is pretty, nobody wants that to be true.
Mm.
Like, nobody comes to my office and says, I really want to keep living with this stuff for the rest of my life. Nobody says that.
Right.
You know, it's a very hard sell that we're not getting rid of it. And so one of the things, you know, I'd like to invite people to do, and we'll do it when we do the exercises, like, what are the things that you have been doing to avoid the things, like say you have, like, say for me, like, I'm doing this starting to do this portraits, and what if I want to do big figurative work that's colorful and great, and I'm resisting it?
Yeah.
And why am I resisting it? You know, and I had a set of questions here, like, is it that there's a lot of categories you can go through. It might be that you're fused, this is very lingo-y, so we're not going to keep it in there, but that you're fused with your thoughts. Like maybe you have some thought, I have some thought that says, you know, you'll never make the transition to big, or you don't know how to handle your paper,
who are you kidding,
some of those thoughts. I actually don't believe those thoughts at this point. I actually do have enough distance from them, because that's what we're going to try to do. We're not going to get rid of the fear, but we want to have a couple of degrees of separation from it.
Yeah.
We don't want to be fused with the belief, with these beliefs.
Oh, I understand.
And fused. I have that. Fused is bad in this
fused
lingo.
Fused means it's just wrapped around your legs.
Exactly.
And
exactly. There's no distance. There's no daylight.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a centimeter between you and that belief.
Wow.
I have centimeters between it now. So I get that. Like, you know, like if you had told me, you know, 5 months ago that I could be doing these, I would have said that's ridiculous. So I know that I can, with practice, I can do stuff.
Yeah.
So that's not what's tripping me up on this one. The second one was avoidance of discomfort. That's the big one.
Avoidance.
What I don't want to feel, it's like, this is like fear means fusion. These are the things that get in your way. Fusion, it's so not counterintuitive. Sometimes psychology stuff is not. Oh, excessive goals, like maybe your goal is too big. You have too big a goal. Like if I were to say, tomorrow I'll have a solo show of all my big work, I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yes, right.
You know,
right.
So that's But that might keep me frozen and fearful to start if I had an excessive goal.
Mm-hmm.
And a big one is avoidance of discomfort. You know, like if I'm, when I start doing that work that I'm avoiding, it's going to be uncomfortable because it's not going to look good yet.
Totally. Inherent in just the whole art process is change.
Exactly.
That has to be there.
Exactly. Right. And if you don't like everybody, I mean, I hate feeling incompetent. I mean, I don't know anybody who likes feeling competent, but that's one of the ways I know I want to be an artist, because it matters to me so much that I'll put up with stuff I can't stand, because that's how, because that's my value, is to be an artist and be a good artist and pursue that.
I see.
I'll put up with stuff. But I'm having trouble with this one, because I really care about the art being beautiful and figurative work. It's harder to hide when it's not working. You know,
right.
So it's,
people can see it.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah. And I don't want to feel that way. So that, I think that's it for me. And, but I'm not positive, but I think that's what it is. So people just, they will do anything just about. And
just
it could,
to avoid that.
Just to avoid it. And it might be, it could be, I mean, I don't know, like what it, I don't know if you have things that like you, big goals that you have in art that you're not doing.
Yeah, not, I don't, not right now, not,
For your book, then,
yeah, well, probably around the book more.
Okay.
The book is, that's more challenging for me, and I've kind of miscued a couple times with the direction of it, and feel like, God, this is harder than I thought, or why can't it be as easy as, I mean, I write, speak, and paint pictures. That's what I do. And here I'm trying to do something that I feel like I've done before, but it's a different form.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not as confident in that.
Okay.
So I'm did one iteration, and now I'm doing another. And it's like, oh, my God, like this is harder.
Okay.
So, yeah, so...
Do you avoid it?
Yeah,
do you...
so, well, I definitely need to, like, okay, I need to clear the decks to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, painting,
mm-hmm.
if I have half an hour between this interview and the next thing, I'll go paint.
Okay.
But I probably wouldn't take on that harder thing because I have this hallucination that I need a lot of space and I need to be on a, you know, in a cabin and have like endless days to work this out.
Got it.
And
got it.
I think that's,
okay.
That's probably the most honest answer I can come with. I think there's resistance there.
And probably underneath that, like, why do you feel you need all those things? Like, cause we know you don't really need all those things.
Well, I feel like I feel like, I need to solve it, and I haven't solved it, in my opinion. In my agent, we haven't. It's like, nah, that's not quite right. Really? You know, try this again. Well, that's not right either. It's like, what? I mean, blah, 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 blah.
Okay.
You know?
Okay. All right. So, I mean, but you probably, doesn't feel great to feel that way, to feel
no.
at sea, and...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a crappy feeling. So
yeah,
you'll tell yourself something, you could say, well, we really haven't figured it out, so I can't do something in half an hour.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right. I think, and there's tons of other cool stuff to do.
Sure.
And so I'll do that. And it's all things I need to do. And, you know.
See, and what you would say to somebody, I think, who was making the same argument about painting, like, I can't paint until I have a right studio. I can't do
it. Oh, it's BS. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Start.
Exactly.
Start.
That's what you would say to that person.
You just iterate. You
right.
just start.
Exactly.
Even 20 minutes, you'll feel better. But
right.
I haven't worked on this now because I was moving. Because I have to do the
right.
interview, because
right.
I have to do this,
right.
and it grows in its anxious, and it's not even that big of a deal, but it is, you know, it's like the unattended fear, it grows.
Yep.
The less you do, the less you do.
Right.
The more you do, the more you do.
Right.
So,
right.
yeah.
So that's, I mean, that would be an example
yeah.
for you. I knew we weren't going to get an art thing.
Yeah, I mean, right,
right
now, it's more just like, oh, my God, which way I want to go with
yeah,
it. And stuff,
right. And again, none of us want to be at sea. We want to be, like, the competent person,
yeah.
who everybody looks up to, you know, all those
yeah.
things.
Yeah, and there might be some things like, oh, do we create, what else do we want to do with Art to Life? And should we do X? And, like, whoa, that's pretty scary, and that's a big deal. And,
okay.
you know, so there's things like that I haven't yet done.
Okay.
That I want to do.
And then what I find, and I don't have to analyze you here, but usually when you keep asking a question, this is another really good thing to do, is to say, and then what would happen? Like, and what might be the problem with that? What
yeah.
might be the problem with that?
Yeah.
So like, just like keep asking.
Right, until
like,
you get down to
yeah, like what's really like underneath
uh-huh.
it. And I think like at fundamentally underneath all that stuff is that sort of basic, I won't be loved, they'll be thrown out. I mean, usually if
yeah,
you keep digging long enough,
right,
that's
right.
where you find yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Even the things that look, you know, sort of suspiciously legitimate, You know, I'm not saying there aren't legitimate excuses.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
There are, but there are the things when you, and you usually know the difference between resistance and, real problems. And it can be like, okay, for example, like sometimes you might watch Netflix because it's been a really tense day and you just need to unwind.
Right.
And that's
right.
not resistance. And sometimes you're watching Netflix because you can't bear to write or you can't bear to paint because that would make you feel incompetent or like crappy.
Right,
you sort of get, you want to pay a lot of attention to, you just want to pay a lot of attention. Like, what is it? What's the difference? Can I know?
Yeah.
So one of the problems I think maybe people have because you are so confident and positive in the art stuff. Uh-huh. And so much of the process that you teach is about joy.
Right.
You know, and it's about play. What I could imagine, I don't know that this goes on for people, but I imagine it does for some people. The people who don't play that easily.
Yeah. Yeah.
What I think they might end up thinking is, like, who was I kidding that I thought I could play? It's this spiral that gets going. And again, you feel like maybe like 115 people posted on Facebook that they're having such joy and they're letting go and it's so amazing and what's the matter with me?
Right.
You know, I can't, you know.
Well, I think that's it. I mean, I think one of the most beneficial things is when someone has the nerve to post what's really going on.
Exactly.
Because there's about 50 people that feel the same way.
And I find that I'm not following so much on Facebook this year, but I know last year when anybody would post that, it would get like incredible
Totally. Yeah.
Because people feel, again, you know, you're the leader of the group, you're the father of the group, and, you know, you're joyful, and you will say that you struggle, you will say things like that.
Yeah.
I don't know if people believe it, because you're like, you tend to be, I'm not saying you should change your personality, but I just don't know how credible it is that, you know, so.
There
was something that you did in one of the, there was some story you told about freezing while you were speaking story.
Right.
That was a great story.
Yeah.
You know, because you were actually.
Oh, it was the most humiliating thing I've ever experienced.
And why is it? People love that. You know, people love that the other person's humiliated because then you don't feel.
Right.
So what's wrong with me for being.
It's like, oh yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, if the dad can stumble and fall and get up and live to tell another day,
yeah.
I can too.
Yeah.
So I think that's an important, you know, just sort of thing to remember again that like, how out of the group am I?
Right.
That can really paralyze people.
Yeah.
So this, and I don't know who helped me with this, and this is one of the things that's great about Art to Life is, and the Academy and all of that, is that you've got this community of people who you don't feel, again, we've established that you need to feel like you're part of a community. So if you are brave enough to say, I'm struggling, I'm having a hard time, somebody's going to help you and somebody's going to say, I felt that way too. And that's going to reduce your fear and isolation, and it's going to make it more likely that you can continue with this vulnerable endeavor where if you're going to be better, you have to suck at stuff if you're going to do better. Because you can't get there without going through, I suck at stuff, and nobody wants to, so it's
this
a total catch-22. This was probably the first or second or third show that I submitted things to, and I said, or somebody else said, you know, I got rejected from a show. And somebody else said, they just totally reframed the language. They said that what they say is, my work wasn't accepted this time. So the things about that reframe, it's super powerful. It's not personal, permanent, pervasive. I think those are the three P's you don't want to do. Like, I got rejected. Like, it's not me. You know, it's like, I do not equal my work.
Right.
You know, it's work that I made. There'll be a next time, and it was this show, and maybe the, you know.
Totally, that day of the week.
Right,
that
exactly.
Judge.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so
juror.
I couldn't have, if you had told me, because at this point I've had my work not accepted, probably half of the time it does, maybe a little bit less, who knows.
Yeah.
And I get like these, the bunch, I submitted these three, which I think are very strong, and, to a couple of shows that it didn't get into. And I was like, that kind of sucks. And literally within 20 minutes, you know, it was just like, I never would have thought that was possible.
To like overcome that and just keep going.
Yeah. I wasn't happy.
Right.
You know, and you don't, the point of the reframing the language is not to be Pollyanna and say it doesn't matter. It's not that at all.
It's just, both, in a way.
How do you mean?
Well, like, to hold the space of, yeah, it doesn't feel so good, but the other side is, like, I'm making this work, and I'm excited about this work. And
right.
It's like, both truths.
Exactly.
Instead of trying to get rid of one.
Exactly.
I eradicate that, you know.
Exactly.
Hold the duality of it.
Exactly. And that's really what we're going to, that's what all this is about, is, like, how do you proceed in the direction of what matters to you in the face of these fears and issues that will never go away?
Yeah.
How do you do that? That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
And one of the things you and I talked about this when we first discussed this talk was this concept of, it's called creative hopelessness.
Mm.
And I love the phrase because it has the word creative in it, and it's because it holds the duality. Like, how could hopelessness be creative?
Yeah.
And it's when you drop that you're going to get rid of stuff, like you cry uncle, like, I'm never getting rid of the stuff that I hate, and I'm never getting rid of it. I'm not going to try. I'm done trying. And we can go over, like, what are some of the ways people try? What are some of the things you do to not feel what you're going to feel anyway? If you stop trying, how much energy does that release for you to do your work?
Wow, right.
Like, if you're no longer, you know, watching Netflix for 10 hours or crying, rehashing the story, or looking at other things on Pinterest for 15 hours and saying,
I suck.
If you're not doing that, you could be working. You really could. And it doesn't mean that you will only feel good when you work because you stop doing that. But you can do two things at once. You can feel kind of crappy and work at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You can even feel very crappy and be in your life at the same time. And that's what we're heading for.
Great.
Is doing that.
Great.
And some of it involves stopping long enough to, like, know what the feeling is. Like, what does it feel like for you in your body when you're feeling?
Like,
for some people, they feel crazy. They feel like they're losing their mind.
Right.
And you don't have to be, like, you know, hallucinating to feel that way. I mean, everything's a continuum anyway.
Uh-huh.
But you could feel like, I can't think straight. I can't formulate a sentence. You feel stupid. Because you are stupid when you're really afraid. Remember, because it's the blood's there. So you can't form a sentence in the same way. But you can feel like you're losing your mind. That's a very common anxious thing.
Uh-huh.
Or it might be, again, you're very dry mouth. You might have, for some people, they might feel it in their jaw. For many people, they feel it in their chest, a tightening in their chest.
Mm-hmm.
There's all sorts of different ways, but it's important to figure out, like, what's mine. So, like, I know this is what it looks like for me when I'm frightened or when I'm avoiding. This is what it looks like for me.
Okay.
And this is what I tend to do, and we're going to map this out we're going to do a little exercise that everybody can take home with them, and I'll have stuff in a PDF. But, like, what are your top 7 things that you do when you're avoiding something? When you're avoiding yourself, essentially, when you're avoiding a bad feeling, what do you do? Maybe you don't sleep. I don't know.
Yeah, or you take a bath, or you go for a run, or you out to dinner.
Those are very healthy. I mean, or you do drugs, or you get pictures.
Oh, yeah.
There's like the whole
you kicked your dog.
List of things. Exactly. There's a whole list of things you do to make yourself feel better. And again, all these things work in the short term and don't work in the long term. And I want people to have an incredible amount of acceptance for themselves, which is really hard to do. What I find is that the stuff that people will tolerate from themselves in terms of bad self-talk, it's stunning, the things you'll put up with from yourself that you would never put up with from somebody else. Or that if somebody was talking to one of your girls, maybe not you, but like the way that you sometimes talk to yourself, you would be in their face, you'd be kicking them out of the house, you would never do it. But somehow, it's like people feel very free to talk trash to themselves.
Yeah.
Very, very free to do that.
This self-depreciating.
Yeah.
You know, well, that's, you know, better than I could ever do anyway, or I'm not a good writer, but.
Right.
You know.
Right. Right, I'll never be a good writer.
Right.
Who am I kidding?
Yeah.
What's like this sort of stuff? And you say that to yourself, whereas if somebody were to say it to one of your daughters, you would be all over the ways that's A, simply not true.
Yeah.
B, you know.
Knock it off.
And if that was enough for them, fabulous. That's quick.
Right.
You know.
Right.
But if they didn't, you would try to talk them out of it. But it doesn't somehow work to talk yourself out of stuff. And it's like, if you were to say something like say you say about yourself as an artist, I'm not really an artist. I'm suck. Who am I kidding? I'll never be an artist. It was a stupid endeavor. It was a waste of time and money. Why did I rent the studio? I can't believe I did that. Forget it. It's never going to work. You might believe that. It would feel like it's true. I haven't sold anything. Whatever. You'd sort of think of a way to say that that's
justify,
true.
Justify those actions.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But if you flipped it, if you were to say, I'm the most amazing artist who ever lived, I'll always be great, people will always buy me, you would recognize that as grandiosity, and you would shut yourself up.
Mm-hmm.
But the negative grandiosity of the trash talk you do for yourself,
fine.
You're fine with that.
Yeah,
people
yeah.
don't think twice about how off that is.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I think it's because the existentials, like the old fear threats are like, you would die. Like, there's a thing in...
Yeah, I see.
In, what is it called? In, have you ever heard of John Gottman?
Yes, heard of him? Gottman.
The marital guy. Yeah. What he says, and it's really true, he says that for a relationship to survive, you need to have like 5 good things for every 1 bad thing.
Wow.
Because the bad things weigh that much more.
Because we prioritize them.
Correct. And we prioritize them back to that existential threat
yeah.
because the existential threats could kill us. Where
yes.
it's like if somebody says, you're amazing, you're a great painter, that's lovely, but it's not going to keep you alive. You
yeah,
know?
I so mean, I break it into 2 kinds of fear. You
right.
know, like there's the bear chasing you fear,
right.
which we don't really have many of these in our day-to-day. But
right.
there's fear, all the other kind of fear, which is not, it's harmless fear.
Right, but it's fear.
But it's fear.
Right.
But understanding that it's not...
Understanding the difference. And
but maybe you can't fix it based on that, but I feel like if you understand it, like, oh, there it is again, it kind of decharges
exactly.
it a little bit.
Exactly. But. And I think, again, I think many times it can. Like many, but what I'm going for is, what's that? There's this wonderful quote, I don't know who to attribute it to. The distance between heaven and hell is a quarter of an inch. And you're looking for that quarter of an inch where you don't quite believe it, where you say, like, this isn't, it feels true, but it's not true.
Uh-huh.
And a feeling is not a fact, and I can feel this and go on. You're looking for just that little bit
yeah.
of distance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what you're
yeah.
looking for.
Okay.
And it's possible to find it. Or again, if you pay attention, if you meditate, for example, the instruction when you meditate is to pay attention to your breathing.
Right.
And it's impossible. You know, like you try to pay attention to your breathing, and next
it's
thing
like
you know.
Monkey brain.
Right,
yeah.
exactly. But then you bring your
go
mind back to it.
Yeah,
you just keep
yeah.
going back. You just keep going back. Okay, Nick. So we're going to do this this matrix tool I was telling you about.
Okay. Is that what this is called?
It's called the ACT matrix. And ACT is something called acceptance commitment therapy.
Oh.
And what it basically, this whole thing we've been talking about, accepting the fact that there are certain things you're never going to change. That's
mm-hmm.
that's the acceptance part of it. And what I love about this theory is that even if you can't, you can still move towards what
yeah,
matters to
right.
you. That
okay.
you don't have to get hung up on it, basically.
Right, right,
it's like,
right.
if you can change it, fabulous. We'll try that.
Right.
I always try that. I
yeah.
always try, let's see if we can do it.
Yeah.
But one of the things I'll be demonstrating here is there's usually like a whole host of behaviors people have been doing for decades that have not worked.
right.
You know,
right,
and
right.
then it's like, okay, like, cry uncle and remember what's important. And
okay,
that's
right,
what we're going to
okay.
flesh out.
Right, right.
Okay, so this is called the ACT matrix, and it's, believe it or not, you know, some geeky guys within this theory of therapy did name it after the Matrix, like the movie The Matrix. What it has to do with the Matrix, I have no idea. I'm not a Matrix person, so I don't know. But anyway, it's
okay.
it is a grid. So it's a quadrant. We've got the horizontal axis and the vertical axis. Oops. Okay. And the right side, you're going to write the word towards. So this is the toward, this is the whole right side of this quadrant is where we're
oh.
hoping to go.
Okay.
And then we've got the away axis, which is the stuff that pulls us away from where we want to go.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Okay. So that's that axis. And then we've got, the top and the bottom. This is sort of like, here, I'm going to put a little camera here. Sorry, a little camera. Oh man, I may have to have you write the camera. This is supposed to be, It looks nothing like a camera. Basically, everything above this line is what you can see.
Oh.
You know, it's like...
Maybe put an eyeball.
There we go. What you can see. But it might be see, think, hear, you know, whatever. This is the five senses on top.
Okay.
Think of this kind
of... Oh, everything you can see.
Yeah.
All right.
Think of this like it's your skin. This is everything internal. Your internal hopes, dreams, thoughts, values, your internal gunk that gets in the way.
Oh.
And then
and
over here is the behavior.
Only seen to you? Well, I mean, do you know about the stuff underneath, or is this subconscious?
It could be, like, if it's unconscious, you can't tell me yet, but with either therapy or journaling or a bunch of other ways you might discover it. But this is stuff that you maybe don't tell people, but you know you're struggling with. But we're going to start. We always start, and it's kind of like, again, the art to life stuff that you do, which is we start with values. We start with the bottom right quadrant, which is your, again, this is internal, underneath this, and this is external. And if I could have drawn a little old-time movie camera that helps, that's like a cue that everything over here is what you can see, touch, feel, the behavior, everything else. Okay? So we start in the bottom right quadrant.
Okay.
And the question you're answering here, the questions you're answering here, it could be broad. We're going to zero in on your art practice. But when I'm doing this with my clients in general, I might just say, who or what is important to you? And kind of how do you want to show up in the world? And not what do you want to do, but how do you want to be? Like, I happen to know for you that you really care about transmitting ideas to people and connecting to people. And it might be, you know, my family matters to me. It might be health matters to me. And this is, it's super important that this is not what you think you ought to feel, what, you know, how you ought to feel, but it's what you do feel. What really, like, deeply matters to you as an artist? Like, what kind of an artist do you want to be? What, why do you make art? What's important about it for you?
Well, I like the journey, the reminder of transformation. And oddly, I like the collective journey, being part of that.
What do you mean there?
Like,
tell me more.
When I make art, it's pretty, it is solitary, but it's, I frame it and think about it in terms of who else can I share this with, and I want to share it with my posse, you know.
I'm gonna write community.
Yeah,
matters.
My community, right?
Community.
Like the artists that are out there.
Okay.
Like I really like the thing of making art and then sharing what I'm learning. It gives me confidence, and then it also I feel like there's more momentum to what I'm doing when it's part of a bigger. I feel more connected.
Okay.
I like the connection. I like connecting to people. I think that's what it is.
Okay, and we might be able to distill this if you want. I don't see any reason to distill it, but if you wanted to, you might say connection matters to me as an artist.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
And journeying, and is there something? I mean, this is plenty and great. Is there something about like sort of your actual work that you might want to say? Like, you want, what do you want to transmit in your work? Because this is an important, and there's no doing this wrong.
I want to transmit the feeling of my aliveness and the chronicle of a growing sensitivity to life that is shown in my art. Like, it's poetry almost.
Okay.
And that feels like that is a really, I think, a worthwhile pursuit.
Okay, great.
It's very much the pursuit.
Great.
Okay.
So the question here, and I can, like, what matters?
Right.
What deeply matters?
Yeah.
So what matters to me as an artist? An artist. That's the big question for this one. And this is the way you do it. You always start here.
Okay.
It's important to know, again, what your North Star is.
Of course, right.
If you don't know that, you're going to lose your way.
This is the inspiration board. This is the desire board.
Correct.
This is, yes. Okay.
Correct. And this is, and you want to, when you're doing this, you want, if somebody says something like, I want to make pretty pictures, you would want to ask more questions to yourself about that.
Sure.
Because again, and that's okay, but like, why do I want to make pretty pictures?
Yeah.
Because it makes me feel connected to the world around me. I mean, like, you want to make this meatier than that.
Yeah.
Otherwise it's just going to not do much for you.
Right.
okay, this, and you're always going this order, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Okay.
Okay? So this, I like to refer to this one as the logic-free zone, the bottom one, because this is what's all the internal crap gunk issues that gets in the way of you showing up this way, to the extent that you get in your own way this way.
I'm not chasing my art as much as I could because I'm so involved in the community and making online programs and working that out. Like, you know, I could get further in it if I was just focused on that. And so what am I fear of missing out? You know, like I want to,
great.
It's
okay.
Really important for me to push my art along. Like right now, because of my move and everything, it's been a couple of weeks, and I feel very anxious about, like, I need to make some art. Like, I feel like an imposter. Like, if I'm not making art, that's what I'm supposed to be doing.
But is the fear of missing out that you're, like, because you want to do all these other things that you, because that makes you feel...
Well, I just want to make sure that I'm moving the art and contributing something substantial.
Okay.
And I know that that's not possible just by, like, you know, occasionally doing paintings.
Okay.
You know.
Let's segue to the book that you want to write that you're finding reasons not to write.
Okay, that's a good one.
So what are some of the, like, feels like maybe I can't write, maybe I don't have something important to say, maybe I'm not good enough, like, because that's the stuff that shows up here.
Yeah.
The stuff that's like against logic-free zone. It's like, it keeps coming back. It's the old crapola. So
this opportunity, and that what I am doing in my programs and courses and in Art to Life, that I feel like I have a responsibility. I'm the guy to, like, explain this whole thing.
Okay.
And the book form of it for the larger audience is challenging for me. And it's like, oh my God, maybe I won't do this.
Okay. Like maybe that. I won't. Maybe you can't. Or maybe
I can't. Maybe I won't. Maybe it won't be good enough to cut the mustard. I mean, I know I can, like, self-publish a book. It's not that, but it's like to really do. I want to do an amazing book.
Got it.
And that has yet to happen.
Okay. Maybe it won't be good enough. I want to do an amazing book, and maybe I'm an imposter in the amazing department, or maybe, like, whatever.
Well,
like
this, yeah.
Some of it might be perfectionism, or maybe, like, it's got to be an amazing book, or.
I feel very happy with what happens in a workshop.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's amazing.
Okay.
And for many reasons.
Got it.
The book needs to do the same thing on a larger scale, and I don't know how to do that
yet. Okay, and this is where you would, again, you don't have to go there if you don't feel like it, but I'm going to encourage people to do this. Because if it's not amazing, then what?
With my agent, she's experienced a workshop, and she's like, this needs to be a book. So I'm showing her my ideas and how I'm presenting this, and she's like, yeah, doesn't have the juice. It's not the same. Doesn't have the juice.
Okay.
She won't waste her time. And not, you know, it's not like she's brutal, but we're not messing around here. This has got to be, like, a really great contribution.
Okay. It has to be amazing. See, this is,
it doesn't happen.
Right.
Yeah, I guess it's a bummer, but I mean,
you'll be okay.
Oh yeah.
So, what deeply matters to me as an artist, the old gunk and the logic-free zone stuff that gets in the way of me showing up this way.
Right.
In way of showing up. And again, I can write this up in a more coherent way of showing up. This is the world, what everybody can see.
Yeah.
So when, one of the metaphors they gave when they were teaching this to us was in terms of, fishing, that you take the bait, you take the bait. And apparently the people who did this matrix, lived in a place where there's a lot of catch and release fishing.
Oh, okay.
And the places where catch and release fishing happens, the fish have learned not to fight when they've learned that they're going to be thrown back. So if they take the bait, they don't fight.
Wow.
So, and this is part of what we're going to try to do. We're going to try to not fight.
Okay.
And when you get hooked.
Right.
We just want you, as soon as possible, recognize that you're hooked. And, like, you're still going to get on the boat and you're going to be a little bruised, but if you fought for 45 minutes, you're going to be worthless.
Okay.
So what we want you to do is recognize it as quickly as possible and not fight. So what does it look like when you take the bait? When the fear of inadequacy or the fear of not being good enough, or maybe I can't figure out how to put the juice into this book, what happens? What happens in the world in terms of do you, like, do everything but write? I mean, like, that kind of stuff. So what are some of the behaviors that show up when you're biting that hook?
Maybe I compensate in other areas that are low-hanging fruit to make myself and others perceive me to be adequate.
Got it.
Right. Compensate.
Compensate in other areas, deal with low-hanging fruit. So, and the low-hanging, and you want to be as specific as possible when you're doing this, again, because this is going to be a visual tool. You're going to have your whole map of what you're doing and not doing, so that when you see yourself, those low-hanging fruit might be, and again, some of it might be work that if you weren't using it in the service of avoiding, wouldn't be, it'd be fine.
Right,
but
right.
You'll know because you're paying attention.
I mean, I think maybe another one might be disconnect, go radio silent.
Oh, okay. And I forgot something super important. Nick noticing in the center of whatever grid that you're making is, this is your grid. So this is Nick noticing what's happening.
Okay.
That your position in this, and I'll walk people through at the end, is that you're paying attention. There's no right or wrong here. This is called a meditation for people who won't meditate.
Right.
You're just kind of paying attention to how you roll.
Okay.
With things, you know, are you moving away from what you want? Towards what you want or away?
Yeah.
And when you bite the away stuff, what does it look like? Or you notice the away stuff, and maybe when you're noticing, you're more likely to be able to make a choice. Like, okay, I'm vulnerable right now because that inadequacy feeling is coming up.
Yeah, okay.
I'm vulnerable to doing that, so
I have a choice. Right, so another one would be saying yes to things just because they're offered, because it's an inclusion, you know, like, hey, Nick, you want to go hang out? I'm like, yeah. And actually, I don't, but I do because someone wanted me to go hang out, kind of.
Got it. And that makes you feel adequate and wanted.
Right,
and,
but the discernment is not...
Right, exactly.
It's not dialed in because I've forgotten where I'm trying to head.
Exactly.
Right.
And this is why it was super important to put that in the center first.
Yeah, totally.
Usually when I'm doing it, I do the circle first because that's the most important.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, it could be anything. And for some people, it could be, you know, it could be Pinterest watching, it could be, you know, like whatever, all the things that you do to not, it could be TV, it could be working. For me, I'm having some interesting, abstract time because I'm avoiding doing figurative. So usually I wouldn't see that but contextually, because I know what I'm avoiding, that for me is an away move.
It's
away from what I want to be doing.
And it's
all context driven. There's nothing inherently bad about saying yes to people.
Right.
And then on this one, so this is, the question here is, you know, what does it look like when I take the bait? The metaphor is. Yeah. And here is, what does it look like when I'm living?
Right.
When I'm living, what do those behaviors look like? Because again, you want as detailed as you can so you could say, when you're at the end of the day, I ask people to, again, take a screenshot of it because everybody loses it. As you go through, if you're actually doing it and taking a look at it 3, 4, 5 times a week and just saying, like, you're just checking in with yourself. Where have I been living?
Where have I been
hanging out? Then you'll start to, I didn't recognize that was an away move.
Right.
I did not recognize that, but it
this
totally
is a pattern.
Was.
You'll just keep doing it.
Exactly. Yeah. So you want to be like, you want to be a noticing, not machine, but really getting discernment. Okay. It's a good word. It's a discernment noticing machine.
Right.
What does it look like when you're on the road? Why does the book matter?
Well, I feel like it becomes a much bigger conversation. I was always making art, you know, in my bedroom or in the little side room. And the cool thing about Art to Life and what I've sort of discovered is that there's a bigger relationship to art to life making. And that's a bigger question, one that I'm still learning about.
Okay.
And it's like, and that's what this book is about. It's about the art of life.
Okay.
It isn't for a painter to learn how to paint. It has that, but I'm on the skinny branches of reaching out further, and I don't think that content's been put out. So I feel like it's the big uncharted, it's the bigger question, it's challenging. It possibly could be the most helpful thing I could ever do in my life. For many, many, many people.
Okay.
Non-artists, artists.
Okay, so let's think.
You know,
so the why for the book is what we're at. We're
answering. Right.
Why book?
Right.
Why book? It's to reach way more people in a deeply meaningful way.
Right.
Okay. What would it look like if you were on the road to making this ultimate connection through the book? What would we be seeing you do?
Not stressed.
Okay. How do you mean?
I would have space in my life.
Okay. So you wouldn't be packing it so much.
Yes, yes, yes.
Spaciousness, not so tightly scheduled.
Yes, right. In a heightened state of joy, and I think I have to be it to write it.
Okay. And the joy would look like what? Like what?
The joy that you feel when you've taken the day and you've gone on a hike, and you know it's this beautiful day, and you the joy coming from the awareness that you have infinite possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a cup half full. It's a cup that your cup actually is overflowing, and that you can provide so much. There's so much.
Okay, now I want to get a little bit more granular about it. What would you be actually doing to make that book happen?
I would be setting time aside.
Okay, like what kind of time?
Like hours, uninterrupted time, morning times. Protected time.
Set protected time aside.
Right.
And I would suggest to you, if I were working with you, that you, exactly what you say in Art to Life. And say, like, don't say you have to have 5 hours to do it.
Right.
You know, I would say, forget the many hours sacred business.
Yeah.
Apply what you know to this.
Right.
Okay. We need for you to have, when you look at this grid, to be able to look at it and say, I'm still not doing it.
Yeah. I mean saying yes to things, I'm going to have to say no to some things.
Absolutely. And then you're going to have to think, what if they don't include me anymore? You know, like other crap.
And I like saying yes to. I have a lot of things that I want to say yes to.
And you also, you know, you're a fun person who enjoys people, so you want to say yes.
Right.
And when you're sitting by yourself, you may have to, again, one of the questions is, what feelings are you willing to put up with in order to get here?
Right.
And again, because we are never going to get rid of the fear of inadequacy. What if I can't do it? That's going to probably keep showing up.
Yeah, right.
But we want you to be able to do this even though that shows up.
Exactly.
Because it's the ultimate in connection, and connection is what you're about.
Right.
So you're going to be setting protective, you're going to say no to people.
Right.
Say no to invitations, to social invitations. That's not going to be easy for you. Okay. Anything else?
And doing less, possibly, for the Art to Life vision. This is Art to Life, but it's
stepping
not
back
yet.
From this.
It's a maybe we won't do that cool next thing that we were thinking of doing, and I have to postpone.
Back on some Art to Life vision.
Right.
For the book.
Right.
For the connection. And it's not the book. It's what it's what the book does.
Yeah.
This is fine.
Yeah.
We could go on
right,
more,
right.
But this is
great.
This is plenty.
I get it. So you can just see.
Right. And screenshot, you're in the middle noticing. And again, when I give this to people, when I give this to people, I've started saying this now. People will come back and they'll say, well, I didn't do it or I started doing it, but I was really bad. Because I was here.
People fill it in.
I do it with them in the session.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I write stuff and they write stuff and they take their copy and I keep a copy.
Yeah.
I will invite them to see it as an open document, because if they're actually using it, they're going to notice more.
So because I now notice that fourth square of how it should look, why does that make it possible for me to actually do that?
Oh, because you're going to, again, you, most people just, again, they don't like the uncomfortable feelings, so they'll do a lot of stuff to avoid them, so they're not paying attention.
Right.
If you're stopping and paying attention, you have much more of a chance of making a choice.
Uh-huh.
So what happens is you have a million choices every day.
Yeah.
And if you're paying attention, if you're actually paying attention, and like you know, every second night, I'm pulling this out of my phone. I set a reminder on my phone, and I'm checking this out.
Yeah.
So first of all, the fact that you know you're checking in with yourself makes you more like, I want to be good at stuff. So I want to have good stuff to report.
Yeah.
But whether or not you do, there's no way for somebody to fail at this exercise except for not to do it. Anything they notice is great. Like if you come back, if I see you in the hall and I say, Nick, how's your grid doing? You say, whoa, Rachel, I've been doing it. I'm noticing I'm not making any changes. I said, I'll say, great noticing, Nick.
Right.
But you're going to want to, when people, what tends to happen is when people are paying attention, it's not that they'll always choose like, oh, if I do this, I'll be further away from my goals. But that is the question you're asking. You're always the question you're asking is, okay, this happened. Did that bring me closer to that connection,
or did
it take me further away?
It's just being aware of your North Star.
It's just being aware of your North Star.
Or whatever the thing is.
And being aware of the stuff that pulls you away from your North Star.
Yeah, right.
And being compassionate. Compassion's really important. And again, people don't have compassion for themselves. It's just really hard. So there's a wonderful site by a local person. Her name is Kristen Neff, and she has a selfcompassion.org. But it's really good because people really struggle with that.
Yeah.
So I have resources that I can give for
PDF. Yeah, we'll share that.
But
people can fill this in on their own.
Totally. Or I can
start
absolutely.
Have this in the PDF.
And this is the set of questions. And
I
encourage people to pay close attention, close regular attention.
Yeah.
And
so you're actually not fixing anything here.
No.
It's just an awareness.
It's an awareness practice. And the awareness opens up the possibility for making different choices in the direction of where you want to go.
Fantastic.
So the question is, how do you get here, living the life you want to live, even though this is not going to go away?
Yeah.
You know, and you get it by paying close attention, by trying to forgive yourself, by accepting, by crying uncle.
Yeah.
By, it's not magic. It doesn't happen right away. You also, one of the things you can do, this is a sub exercise, is you can, all these other things that you do. You might take all of them and say, how do they work in the short term? You know, how do they work? And they probably work really well in the short term.
Mm-hmm.
And it's helpful for people to see that because people end up kicking themselves. I can't believe I'm doing this. I mean, you're doing it for a reason because you don't want to feel shitty.
Right.
That's why you're doing it.
Right.
So if you keep doing that, you know, that allows some compassion for yourself. Okay, fine. I'm not an idiot. I'm not a loser. I'm a human struggling. It's hard.
Right.
It's just hard. So, okay, if I can sort of like stop, give myself a hug and then a nudge, you know, you're doing both. You want like acceptance, empathy, and a nudge.
Yes. Okay.
Because you're not going to get here with just the acceptance and empathy.
Okay.
So this is it.
Great. All right. So the plan is that this matrix, you can download this and start growing that awareness. You know, I love this because it's not unrelated to art making. You become more sensitive the more you try things and the more you go out on the skinny branches of what's possible for you. This almost is like for the life version of that. And it'd be awesome if you did this and you can share it in the forum under the masterclass. Rachel will be in there and we can kind of keep working with this because I just think it's fantastic.
It works like anything. It works best if you're deliberate about how you'll use it. Like if you set a reminder on your phone that four times a week, and it can be 5 minutes. You know, you're just sort of like looking at it and say, where have I been hanging out? Which quadrant have I been hanging out in? And again, try to do it with no judgment or as little judgment as possible.
Yeah, right.
Just say like, well, that's interesting. Just have an attitude of curiosity about it. It's like, whoa, sometimes you don't realize it. I had no idea that was an away move.
Wow.
No idea, but it totally was now that I'm paying attention.
Towards,
right.
Yeah, it's great.
Right.
Well, listen, thank you so much.
You're very
and
welcome.
You guys keep the questions coming. And again, you can post them all in the forum. And I have a feeling that there's going to be a part two to this. I have a feeling. So we'll dive into this. I love this stuff.
Great.
Thanks again.
You're very welcome.